What's going on, everyone? Welcome to episode 5 of the BFG podcast. I am Mike. I am here with my sometimes friend, sometimes foe. I think I used that opening already, but whatever. This is episode 5. Tyler. Tyler, say hi to everybody.
Hey, everybody.
So we got a little bit of a smaller show today, but knowing us, we could still probably go along. We're going to start out with a review of Jurassic World, mm-hmm. since we're like a week late on that one. Mm-hmm. We have not talked about it, so whatever we say is going to be new to both of us. Mm-hmm. Tyler is going to talk about some board games that he's been playing, interested in. I am going to talk about the new Five Nights at Freddy's book that just came out, finish that one, as well as a little bit about Ultimate Custom Night. We're going to talk some video games. We're going to talk Life is Strange, my favorite game of all time, just had its 20th anniversary in Banjo-Kazooie. We're going to talk Old Republic. We are going to do a very quick, probably, hopefully, some final thoughts on Toys R Us's official closing, which was this past Thursday, which was ironically also the 20th anniversary of Banjo-Kazooie, so it's like good and bad at the same time. Mm-hmm. And we're going to ask a weekly question, or bi-weekly question, like we always do. Yeah. So we'll get into that at the end. So Tyler, what is going on in your world? What's been new from 2 weeks ago?
Not a lot is new. We've been... the one really good thing, and I think I might have mentioned this last time, but the one really good thing that's come out of this so far is lots more time to play video games.
Of course.
I've been playing a lot of video games, and so we'll talk about that in a little bit. I was going to kind of update you guys about like the games that I've been playing, not even new games, just like catching up on stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what's going on with me? Well, we just got back this past week. One of my other close friends outside of you, because I do have some other friends, surprisingly, I don't know how. We just got back from Universal celebrating a bachelor/bachelorette party, so that was fun going down there in the 90 bajillion degree weather with a bunch of kids running around. That was always a fun time. Mm-hmm. It was always a fun time. I am recovering a little bit. I was not feeling well. My throat is still a little here or there.
Yeah.
But I'm strong enough to do the podcast today.
Okay.
I'm strong enough to do the podcast today. I've been playing some Kingdom Hearts. I'm not very far into it. I think I'm on like one of the first bosses.
Mm-hmm.
But I am playing it like I promised in the last episode. And really, that's about it with me. You know, nothing too exciting the past couple weeks. You know, just kind of chugging along, doing my job, playing some games, and getting notes ready for another episode. So, with that being said, we'll just jump right into Jurassic World.
Yes.
And so, both of us are obviously big Jurassic Park fans, outside of three. I think we can safely say that.
I think everyone can say
I mean, you know, maybe some little kids or whatnot might like it.
If you've watched, like, The Smurfs, I think that's probably about on the same level as Jurassic Park 3.
Yeah, I can say that. So, we saw Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, and we didn't actually discuss who's going to start this one. So, Tom, I'm going to let you start this one, because what I have to say may surprise you. So, go ahead.
Okay, so... the one thing that hit me, like, what really hit me in this movie, and you kind of see it in, like, Jurassic Park 3 and stuff, and I like this a lot better than Jurassic Park 3, but it's basically just a bunch of really stupid people. Like, the only really smart person I can think of in this whole film is Jeff Goldblum, and he's not there really enough. For my taste.
He's pretty much just there at the beginning of the movie explaining something, and at the end of the movie explaining something.
He's like the only voice of reason in this entire movie.
Yes.
He's like, in just a film of people making stupid decisions, he's the guy that's kind of there to be like, guys, we're going to make ourselves go extinct if you don't stop.
Mm-hmm.
We're on this path where, you know, like, all these bad things are happening, and you're encouraging them to happen, and you need to stop it. And everybody's just like, no, we want to catch dinosaurs. And, like, even, you know, like, as much as I love Chris Pratt, like, he's a lovable, charming guy, you know, and I think he does really well with the character he's given, but even then, it's like, whenever they tell him he has to go back to the island to save these animals, he's like, well, no, I'm not gonna do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, okay, he's gonna be, like, the voice of reason in this movie. And then they're like, you know, well, whatever, your name is on the manifest, you can show up or not, and inevitably he's there.
Mm-hmm.
And he shows up on this island, even though he knows that it's a dumb decision. And it's like, that's kind of just par for the course for this movie. It's a whole bunch of people making dumb decisions.
Yes.
And I think there's one really significant scene that I don't want to spoil if you haven't seen it yet, but there's one really significant scene that... I think you and I can both... I think I even made a comment during the movie with the big bad dinosaur this time and the headhunter. You know the scene I'm talking about.
Yeah, that...
Where it's like, just why? Why? what could possibly possess you to do something like this?
A four-year-old would know better than to do something like this. But
yeah.
I digress.
And so it's just one of those where, like... I don't know. I thought it was a fun movie, and I'm swayed a little bit. I'm a little bit, you know, I'm into the idea of like all the big dinosaurs and stuff, and I love the big dinosaurs. And so, like, seeing them on all their glory and seeing, like, new hybrids and stuff, I was like, wow, this is so cool. But at the same time, I'm just sitting there, like, shaking my head at everybody, whether it be the antagonist or the protagonist. Like, there's really nobody in this movie that makes good decisions. Even, you know, like I said, Jeff Goldblum is, like, the voice of reason in this movie, but he doesn't really have an impact on what happens in the movie. Absolutely. He's just there to kind of make commentary. He makes, like, a social statement about, like, how everybody is being stupid. But he doesn't really have a say in whether these stupid things happen or not. And that's kind of how it's framed, because within the context of the movie, he's supposed to be like in a court deciding if they should be saving the dinosaurs from this island or letting them go extinct again. And I kind of like that idea of, you know, like the main conflict of the movie, the preservation versus extinction argument, I thought was a really good way to frame the movie. But I feel like that wasn't really paid off as well as it should be.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, they decided to let them go extinct, but then, you know, everybody was like, no, we can't let this happen. And so this, like, underground group goes to the island to save them anyway, or, you know, as it were.
Yes.
And obviously, you know, things go wrong and twists and turns happen and people aren't what they seem and so on and so forth as you go through the movie. And it's all fairly straightforward. There weren't any twists that I didn't see coming. But, you know, as far as a generic action movie goes, I thought it was executed pretty well, but it's just full of dumb people.
You know, essentially, you pretty much hit the nail on the head for all of us, so I'm not going to repeat a lot of what you said in that aspect, but a lot of what I think of it is that we've seen it all before, this type of thing. We've seen this type of scenario play out, except now it's with dinosaurs, and to kind of go back with you know, Chris Pratt and Owen in the movie.
And I mean, we've even seen this scenario play out with dinosaurs before. It's not all that much different from like the original trilogy.
True. And you know, I think the big thing for me, it was like, you know, especially getting Owen to come back.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, the doctor comes up and he's like, hey, you know, we need help, we need to save Blue, because Blue is still there. And
even then, whenever she says, like, one of your raptors is still alive and we can save them, he's like, no, I'm not going back there. Are you crazy?
But then he, at the end, he started really thinking about it, having one of those moments like, well, it's Blue, I should go back, blah, 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 blah. Because they were saying Blue is the most intelligent of the species, we really, really need to save him, you know, this and that, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it even got a little emotional at that one part when they were leaving the island. I'm not going to spoil anything this time, so I don't make Tyler have to go back and edit a billion things. But, you know, like, I'll even say that did get a little emotional with them. In general, though, I mean, it was a good popcorn movie. Obviously, it's set up for a third one.
Dinosaurs are awesome.
Dinosaurs are definitely awesome.
If you like dinosaurs, you will like this movie.
Yeah, but it was not anything to run home about. Obviously, I think the first two are still better. I did like Jurassic Kingdom from 3 years ago in 2015.
Jurassic World?
Jurassic World, yes. Sorry, I clearly cannot think today.
That's going to be the next one.
Yes. But just in general, it was a good movie. You know, I didn't like it as much as the other one. Obviously, still better than 3, Jurassic Park 3, but...
Okay,
yeah.
So I need to geek out for 1 second.
We can geek out for more than a second, if
you like. So, you know, in movies, one thing, it's super campy, and it should be silly, but one thing I always love is whenever they reference their own film titles.
Yes.
And I love, in this movie, when Jeff Goldblum just looks straight at the camera and goes, "Welcome to Jurassic World."
Well, of course, that's amazing, because it's also Jeff Goldblum. So, you know, there's no difference.
You know, he's an incomparable actor, and just, like, having these moments like this where he knows that, you know, he's got these campy lines and things, but, like, just something about him, like, his delivery and just kind of his, like, elegance. You know, he's kind of becoming one of those more prolific actors. You know, he's one of those that's kind of, like, leaving a legacy. And, to have him deliver lines like that is just the best thing ever. I kind of felt the same way during Thor Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
Just, he played like this really just off-kilter, goofy character, but it played so well. Like, something just about kind of his... He's got like an eccentric, but also menacing air about him. And I like that a lot. But anyway, I really liked that moment.
I mean, that was...
You know, they're like, they say the name of the movie, and you're like, oh, he said the name of the movie!
Oh, Jeff Goldblum, never leave. us. You will forever be known as Dr. Ian Malcolm, or the Grandmaster, if we're going to the Marvel movies.
Yeah, or the Fly.
Or the Fly. We could sit here and just talk about Jeff Goldblum for
this. We could. We could have a Jeff Goldblum podcast.
Yeah, maybe he'll be listening to us. Who knows? so yeah, anyway, Jurassic World, Fallen Kingdom, very good movie. Definitely worth to see it, especially now later on since it's been out for a few weeks. You know, it probably won't be as crowded. But those were kind of my thoughts, Todd, and I guess we really had the same thoughts on that one, so we can't really sit here and argue with each other.
Yeah, we don't need to.
Yeah, so that's...
Which is odd for us.
That really is odd.
Like, I don't know what to do whenever we agree on stuff. Well, I just figured, sit here quietly for this.
Well, I mean, you know, we did say it was going to be a little bit shorter, but I figured that one was going to be our longest topic, but I guess we'll transition into the next thing now.
Yeah.
Just real quick, I wanted
to say, if you're watching this... If you're, like, on YouTube or something, I am noticing a little bit of a delay that's also kind of, like, correcting itself, but then slowing down again. The video is, like, coming in and out of sync with the audio a little bit, so I apologize for that.
So if we look like a Japanese anime, you know why.
I was thinking I would try to add a delay to the audio later on to fix up, like, the syncing issue, but it looks like it's not actually just a delay. It looks like it's kind of slowing down, but then catching up with us again.
Yes.
So if you're watching the video... version of this, then we apologize now if you're on YouTube. If you're on the podcast, you have no idea what we're talking about, and you're all good.
And that's so, okay.
Yeah. Either way, just enjoy.
Because we love you all anyway.
Yeah. And if our audio is out of sync, you can always mute the volume and add your own voices, because that's probably more entertaining than anything we have to say anyway.
Pretty much. We're off on a roll on the first one. We can't argue about Jurassic World, so you know. Anyway, so transitioning to the next one. Tyler, tell me about some board games you've been playing. What's been going on with that?
Okay, so if you know me, you know that I'm into board games. We've talked before on the podcast about how, you know, I'll periodically update us on board games and things. I don't remember if I talked before about Legendary.
I don't think so.
But, okay, so Legendary is, it was originally like a, it was made by Topps.
Okay.
Like the card company, you know, they do like baseball and all that. And they released a game for Marvel called Legendary. And it was a deck building game, so you'd each have it would lay out on a mat, kind of like, you can't see it if you're listening or watching, but there you see like my mouse pad here. It's probably about that size.
Okay.
And you have four like heroes that you choose and build a big deck out of them, and you start out with I think like 12 or 13 cards. And then as you go, you, like, flip new heroes and recruit them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they get, like, increasingly powerful as you get the points to recruit them and stuff. So, like, you'll start out with, you know, like, a couple recruitment points and a couple attack points, depending on what cards you draw. You have, like, the cheap cards. And then as you go, you can recruit, you know, like, Thor and Black Widow and Hulk and all them. And there's, like, all these Marvel heroes that you can recruit. And you use them to fight the bad guys, which are on a separate row above the heroes. There's, like, a villain deck. And that gets flipped every turn, and you have to, like, take out the villains before they escape. And if they escape into the city, then, like, the bad happens, you know, whatever that might be, the bad stuff. And then you've got, like, a master villain over here who's normally, you know, it's like Doctor Doom or someone like that is, like, your master villain over on this side. And you've got, like, objectives you have to complete, like saving a certain number of civilians or, you know, hitting him a certain number of times, but his attack is way up there. You know, he's got, like, 10 attack or 12 attack or something. And so there's kind of this it takes a while, but it doesn't feel like a big long game. The setup and teardown takes a little bit because you have to separate all the decks back out once you're done. But the game normally takes about an hour and a half.
That's not bad. And
No. And I've been playing that. My brothers and I like that one a lot, and we've been playing it. But one that I've been really itching to play is the Alien version, which is called Legendary Encounters. And mostly because it's me and I love the Alien movies.
Of course.
That's like one of my big series. And the Legendary Encounters version, they've also got some others. They've got like, I know they've got a Predator edition. I don't know if they've got any others. I think they do. But the one that I was super stoked about was the Alien one. Mm-hmm. And in that one, the mechanics are all the same. You know, you flip and you have the heroes from the movie, like Ripley and Joner and... Dallas, and you know all them, like, from the movies, but the Hive, in here it's not called a villain deck, it's called a Hive deck, because it's Alien, and the Hive deck is built up of actual objectives. So in Marvel, it's just a randomized thing. You pick some random heroes, you pick some random villains, you pick a random, like, supervillain, and then each scenario plays out as just kind of, like, its own self-contained thing, And each mission, you know, it's just kind of like a standalone game. It is just kind of like a card building game, you know? Kind of like, I mean, obviously it's more complex, but it's like playing a game of Magic or Yu-Gi-Oh or something at the end of the day. You're basically just playing a card game. The difference with Legendary Encounters is the game can actually take place throughout the movies. Mm-hmm. So instead of it being just like randomized villains or randomized aliens in the Hive deck, you actually, as you go, you'll actually find like objective cards that'll tell you what to do. And each one plays through the movie. So you have like three mini decks. And you pull up these three mini decks, shuffle them together, put them in the Hive deck. And then as you flip them, you might come across one that, you know, like opens up the air shaft so that you can blast the alien out. Mm-hmm. Or one that like locks the air vents so they can't, so he can't get to you anymore, and so on and so forth. And then, you know, in that, so, you know, you play through like the first scenario like that, like actually going through kind of the steps of the first movie. And they've got these for like all the movies now. So you can play through, you know, Alien, Aliens, Alien Resurrection, so on and so forth. And so it, you can kind of play more randomized.
Okay.
But the idea is that you can actually play through the movies, playing through these objectives. And the other difference is, in regular Legendary, you flip the villains.
Okay.
You see what's coming as they come. In Alien, you don't. You lay them face down. So you don't see what's coming for you until they're already in the combat zone and attacking you. And it adds kind of that level of, like, intensity and stuff to it. You know, it kind of makes it a little bit more stressful, and I liked it a lot. I think, and my brother summed it up. He kind of said he's more interested in the Marvel theme, which I like both of them kind of equally. I'm fine with the Marvel theme and I'm fine with the Alien theme. But he said he likes the mechanics of the Alien one a little bit more. Kind of the stress and the layout of the Alien one is a little bit better for him. And I kind of agree with him on that point. I think I like kind of the unknown a little bit more. I think it adds to it, having the cards face down and having the objectives to follow and stuff. It gives it a little bit more structure than the Marvel one. But yeah, that one I can highly recommend. That's probably one of my new favorite games. I liked Legendary a lot, but whenever I played the Alien one, it kind of like raised it a level. I think that's probably like one of my, I try to get that out to the table as much as I can now, because I love that game and just the way it plays. But anyway, that's kind of my breakdown, real quick breakdown of Legendary Encounters. If you like deck building games or Alien or, you know, just even like cooperative games, because you all play together. It's like however many people play, you all play as a team.
Okay.
And so you all collect heroes and you're trying to take out the aliens together. It's not like a competitive game. And I like that a lot too. But yeah, so, and you know, like I said, it's got whatever you're into. You know, if you like superheroes more, get the regular Legendary. If you like Alien or Predator or something like that, they've got a Firefly one. If you like Firefly, the, you know, big cult status show, if you're more into that, they've got that too. But yeah. Legendary Encounters or just regular Legendary. Those are, it's a great, great series. Whichever flavor you like best.
Or just a combination of all three. They can jump right into
Yeah.
So
the other game that I played recently was called Monopoly Gamer. You might have seen it out there. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because, and everybody points this out, like everyone that I've talked to has mentioned this to me. It's just called Monopoly Gamer, but it's licensed by Nintendo. It's a Nintendo game, so it's only Nintendo characters. It's Mario Monopoly, but it's called Monopoly Gamer. And the mechanics of it are changed a lot. Like, the still the core mechanic of it, you know, going around the board, collecting deeds and things like that, buying spaces is still the same. But you've also all got different power-ups. Mm-hmm. Whatever character you choose has, like, different power-ups that they can activate. And you've only got one rolling die. So you can go 1 through 6. You don't have 2 dice anymore. You've got 1 die. So you can either move 1 through 6, and then your second die is like your power-up die. And depending on which one you get, you either activate like a normal ability that's written on a card, or you activate your special ability, which is on like your avatar card. And it was fun for what it was. It was a lot faster. So if you need a game that's not, you know, you're not going to sit there for hours on end, because Monopoly can tend to drag on, like the regular version of Monopoly can. If you play by, like, the official rules, I know everybody's got their own house rules, their own quick play rules, stuff like that. But if you're playing by, like, the normal official Monopoly rules and you're tired of it taking, you know, like, 4 or 5 hours to get through a game, this is, like, a fast version of that, because every time you go around Go, there's, like, a boss you can fight. And whenever you get to the final boss, once you get to Go and you flip and it says final boss, that's it. You either fight the final boss or you lose and that's game over at that point, regardless of where you are. But the abilities seem a little bit imbalanced, and that's what frustrated me, because, like, Haven had played it with a group at the school, and she said she just swept them by playing Toad. And, you know, they were playing as,
oh,
like...
Oh, Toad's awesome.
Yeah, well, they were playing as some of the more, like, mainline characters. They were playing as, like, Mario and Peach and stuff like that, and Luigi, and she just swept the game with Toad. Like, she destroyed them. And she told me about how it played out for her. And so we played it again here, and it was, like, the exact same way. I picked Mario, and she picked Toad, and it was just, like, I didn't have a chance. I don't know, you know, we might play a couple more times. I'll try it with, like, different characters and stuff. But it seems to me like there are certain characters that are just really built to get around the board and get all the spaces. Mm-hmm. And then there are certain characters that are meant to, like, build up money. But at the end of the game, the way it scores you is not by, you know, just, like, one winner. It's based on each card has, like, its point score. And so being Toad is built to kind of get around the board and get the spaces fast. He's kind of at the advantage all the time. Because... like, at one point, I was, like, a quarter of the way around the board. I was, like, at just visiting jail. Mm-hmm. And she was, like, already at... I don't remember what the name of it was, but it was, like, the Park Place equivalent of the board. She was, like, already almost back around at go, and I was, like, not even halfway yet. And she already had, like, four deeds, and I had one. And so, you know, it could just be the luck of the draw, you know? Because there is a certain amount of luck involved in, like, your dice rolls and things like that. But it seems to me, like, looking at the abilities of different characters, like, some of them let you roll again, and some of them let you get a bunch of extra coins, and some of them let you, you know, like, screw other people over and give, like, make them lose a turn, or so on and so forth. And so it seems to me like some abilities are way better suited for, like, the Monopoly style of play, and some of them are just more, like, fun abilities. Mm-hmm. So it might take a little bit more playing around to see if maybe there's something else that could counterbalance the Toad better, or if that's just kind of the way of the game. There are certain people at an unfair advantage, but it seems like it's a fun little game, and I think it'd be a lot of fun, especially for younger people. The kids at the school liked it a lot more than I think I did. But I think just as a core game, it's not... the concept is fun, but it's executed in a way that kind of makes it not fair. And so that one I can't really heartily recommend unless you've got kids that are super into Nintendo. If you've got a kid that likes Mario, they're gonna love it. But for, like, you know, a core group, like people our age playing a game, I can't really recommend Monopoly Gamer. Okay. But that's my thought about that. I think I listed a whole bunch. I had, like, a big pile of games, but I think I might focus on just, like, a couple of them, because those are the two that I actually played this week.
Okay.
That I actually had the time for. There's a few more I want to talk about in the long run, just kind of, like, my favorites and things, but we can focus on those later. The only other one right now that I want to talk about, and it's because of we just finished it. It's a monthly subscription box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's made by Dispatch.
I can do it too.
I'm trying to remember the name of the company. I think it's not Mindbenders. It's I'm gonna feel bad now. But anyway, it's one of, like, the escape room people around here. One of the escape rooms that's, like, it's not a huge franchise, but they've got, like, a few different, like, four or five different locations. I'll figure it out and I'll post their link, like, with the video and stuff. But they release, like, a monthly subscription box that is its own. It's called, like, an escape room box, but it's not necessarily, like, an escape room. It's more like codes and puzzles and things like that. And we've been playing, my brothers and I, we've been playing through that over the past, like, 7 months.
Okay.
And the core series just finished. They said there's going to be more. There's going to be, like, a mini series, like a 2-part mini series, and then I think there's, like, a whole separate series that's starting too. But we played through the first, like, series, which is seven boxes, I think. And each box has kind of its own gimmick. And a lot, you know, it might lead you, a lot of them, every one of them actually, will lead you online at least for a little bit. You need, like, a laptop or a smartphone or something. But they all lead you online, and normally they'll have, like, riddles and puzzles. And that's kind of, like, the main gimmick, because you have to answer questions on the website to, like, finish it. And there's always kind of, like, a finishing video. Whenever you find, like, the video wrap-up, that's when you know you're done with the box. But each box also has its own, like, physical puzzles. So, like, one week there was Mancala, if you know Mancala.
Oh, fantastic.
The one time they sent us... Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of other stuff in the box, too, but one of the puzzles was, like, a Mancala game. And you had to, like, go to, you had to decipher a code to find out a website, and you go to that website, and it's like a Mancala Rules website, and then at the very bottom, buried in the comments, there's like a comment by one of the characters from the game.
Really?
And he leaves like a list of movements that him and his opponent took. And if you do it that way, it reveals like a new message, like in the Mancala game and stuff like that. There's another one where it's like, there's a, one of the, like the fans, like the, one of the flip out, you know, like fan yourself fans. And, but there was like a hieroglyphic code on there that you had to decode. There's like, they'll send you like a black light and a decoder ring, not a ring, but like a coin, a decoder coin and stuff like that. And those actually translate across the boxes. It's not like self-contained, being it's a series. Some of the stuff you find in like the first or second box, you still need for like box 5 or 6. And so you kind of like collect these pieces of evidence all throughout to try to clear this guy of murder. Mm-hmm. He's being accused of murdering his wife, and, you have to clear his name. And it was just a really cool experience. And so, you know, depending on what you're into, if you're into like escape games and things like that, it is a really fun thing to do just to get people together. Because one of those things where, you know, it's like we try to get together with the family every week. Mm-hmm. But this gave us something we could do like once a month where I could just like take it over there and we would spend an afternoon doing it. And normally, I mean, some people have had, they've had like varying degrees of luck. I know some people are saying like this was an easy box, this was a hard box. For us, it seemed to take somewhere in the vein of like 2 to 3 hours. Mm-hmm. But that was also, you know, doing other things, because a lot of times like we'd be, you know, one of my brothers, he's an artist, and I'll link you to his stuff too. But he'll like be drawing for a little bit, or you know, one of them might like go eat or something like that. You know, it's like we all kind of have our different things going on, but it's just kind of this like overarching thing that we do. And so if you really just buckled down and sat and did it, I'm not sure how long it would really take, but it seemed like for us the sweet spot was around like 3 hours or so.
Okay.
But those are just a whole lot of fun if you're into like solving riddles or doing escape rooms and things like that. It's just kind of a fun experience, and it's something you can do like over the long term with a group, just something to get you guys together if you need something like that.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
It is. It was really cool. I'm excited to get more of them. Like I said, there's like a 2-part mini series that comes after the main series. And so I'm excited to get that in. We'll do that next.
That's something a little different to do than just sit and play like an actual video game and whatnot.
Yeah.
You get your mind going, and that's what it's all about, really. Mm-hmm. All right. So transition to the next thing. I'm just going to talk real quick about the new Five Nights at Freddy's book. It's called The Fourth Closet. Obviously, follow up to the first two. This one had to deal a lot more with sister location, so I'm going to run right this, and I'll tell you, I don't know too much about it.
If you know me, I'm not super into Five Nights at Freddy's. When it first came out, I watched some people, you know, do gameplay and stuff. Yes. It was one of those, it became like a viral thing. Like, whenever it first blew up, it was like, you couldn't go on YouTube without seeing five people playing Five Nights at Freddy's and, like, freaking out about it. And so, you know, I never played it myself, but I kind of hopped in that bandwagon for a little bit where I would just kind of, you know, I'd like hop on YouTube, and if I was bored, I'd like watch, you know, Markiplier or somebody play it for a little bit, just, you know, because I was bored. But the gameplay and the mechanics never really appealed to me. I never got into it personally. It was just one of those where I'm like, okay, well, I'll watch other people play it. But it was a big deal for a while. But it was just never my thing personally. And you know, that's the beauty of video games. There's always something different for someone. You know, everybody, no matter what your taste, there's always something that'll appeal to you, you know, in some vein. And that just wasn't my type of game. But anyway, I kind of went off on a tangent.
No, you're good.
Back to you.
So actually, to kind of go along with that, you know, it was just the lore for me what brought it in. You know, it like everybody reminded me like those 1980s Chuck E. Cheese's and those things come alive.
It was kind of fun seeing all of this evolve.
Oh, absolutely.
From just like a little indie game that some guy slopped together to this kind of like phenomenon, and then seeing how like not even just the creators kind of embraced that like all the conspiracy theories and stuff, mm-hmm. but they kind of. Everybody had their own theories, and they were posting online. Everybody was talking about it, and then the developers started getting in on it, and they started like dropping tiny little hints and like conflicting stories and things like that to try to throw people off the track. And so That was really cool to see. I think I got more into the idea of it, like reading articles about it, than actually watching it or playing it.
And that's what it really gets down to, is just what are people finding it. And I'm sure there's still plenty of secrets, even down to Five Nights at Freddy's 1, which actually, I just downloaded all five of them yesterday. I watched I watched all the videos on them, but the Steam Summer Sale had a bundle of all five of them for like $7.30.
Yeah.
And they're normally like $8 a piece, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, going back to the books, like, we got off on a tangent, but at least we stayed on topic for what we were getting ready to talk
about.
So, The Fourth Closet deals with more sister location, you know, follows the same characters, picks up 6 months, give or take, after the end of the Silver Eyes, which was, or not the Silver Eyes, the, I can't remember the name of the second book right now, but it picks up right after that, 6 months after that one, and I thought this one was actually a lot better. It answered some more questions. One thing, slight spoiler, but not really, depending on how you look at it, is if you, well, I mean, it's, I'm not going to say what happened. The last page of the book was like, holy shit. But,
I think with Five Nights at Freddy's, I think it, like, you have your really passionate fans,
yes,
you know, those people that love to get into the, like, theories and stuff behind it. But I feel like there's at least as far as, like, how many people are involved, I think you're less likely to offend people with a spoiler about not even a game, but just like a novelization of a video game than you are with, like, you know, the new blockbuster superhero movie or something like that. I think I would be a little bit less worried about spoilers in this case than I usually am about, you know, like the new Avengers or something.
Yeah. But the one spoiler I would say is that after you beat Sister Location, you know, obviously you get, like, Five Nights at Babies, whatever you want to call it, that has a whole bunch of... Yeah, that's what it's called.
What?
That's one of the animatronics' names, is Baby. B-A-B-Y.
Five Nights at Babies?
Is that the actual name
of a game?
Well, no. The last game is called Five Nights at Freddy's Sister Location. But
okay,
Baby's, like, the main protagonist of that one.
That's huge.
But the slight spoiler is that in the book, You have Funtime Freddy, who's there. You have Baby, who's obviously there.
Mm-hmm.
You have Foxy, who's there. But Foxy, in the book, is like kind of a combination of Foxy and Mangle. And Mangle's not in Sister Location, at least to my knowledge, from what I've seen, what I play, what I've read. They also did not have Ballora in this book, which is kind of odd, considering how all the characters that were in this book played into the lore of Sister Location, the actual game. So that was a bit odd. The final page in the book, I'm not going to spoil anything, you know, kind of answers a big question of where the last book left off.
Yeah.
Probably could leave room for another one if they want to wrap up some more things with those main characters. But all in all, I thought it was very good. I thought it was a lot different than the other one. Obviously, the first book still has, you know, a very special place to me, because I had to deal with, like, the main location of Five Nights at Freddy's. And what are you looking up over here? You were looking it up.
No, I'm looking up I'm looking up stuff for later on.
Stuff for
a future topic.
Okay. So, for me, really, I quite enjoyed the book. I thought it was done well. I actually finished it in, like, 2 days. I just couldn't put it down. Definitely something worth picking up. And it's cheap, too. I think you can get it for, like, $7 on Amazon right now.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, it's normally, like, $9.99. I think if you go anywhere else, something along those lines. So definitely worth picking up that to read another batch into the lore and following the characters of Charlie and John and Marla and all the others. Moving on, my other half topic for this one is Scott released another free game, Five Nights at Freddy's Ultimate Custom Night. So Ultimate Custom Night is essentially takes all the games, every single one of them, gives you every single animatronic, and they have what's known as 50-20 mode, which is 50 animatronics at the highest level. I don't think anybody's going to be able to beat that, because literally as soon as it starts, everything happens at once. Like, I saw Markiplier try it, and on his first try, he lasted 17 seconds, because there's actually a timer underneath, you know, you got to go to 6 a.m. still. And there's a timer underneath to show you how long he made it. And he made it 17 seconds. So I think it was 17.3, if we have to be precise.
How long do you need to make it?
So I believe every hour is a minute and a half in the game. But I don't even know if I want to try it. And of course, you know, you can go, and a lot of the animatronics do things differently, because you got to watch, you know, certain cameras. You got to wind up a music box. You got to change the music in the music box. everybody just has something different going on, and everybody can come at once, you know. You gotta memorize a crud load of keys and whatnot. So I'm sure there's some definite Easter eggs in this one to kind of throw more into the story, maybe tie it into the book, either tie it into the franchise. But it's also a free game to play if you ever want to torture yourself and try to make it past anything. But with me, like I said, I just downloaded all 5 of them from the Steam Summer Sale, which is probably still going on at the time of this recording. So definitely worth checking out there. You get all 5 of them cheaper than one, than the price of one. But really, that's what I got to say about that one. I know I didn't go too much in depth in it because I don't want to spoil anything. If I start talking about it, I will spoil some things, which I don't want to do. But definitely something worth checking out. The book, the game, the series just as a whole. There is a movie coming. I believe the studio, which I can't recall off the top of my head right now, the studio behind it also did the Paranormal Activity movies.
Okay.
Which to me is great, which I think it's been said before, is because the Paranormal Activity movies had a budget of like shoestrings and quarters, for crying out loud, and it turned out really well. And much like how we talked about the Deadpool review, is that I think a movie like Five Nights at Freddy's needs to have that kind of smaller budget just to make it like that much better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it definitely could be done. So I'm looking forward to seeing it. You know, I don't mind jumping into it. I like the lore of it. I like the idea of it. All the games kind of tie in. You know, I would have to say from what I've watched, Five Nights at Freddy's 2 is probably like my favorite one, which I can't wait to get to that one. I'm almost done with Five Nights 1 because it's like, you know, you can finish that in 2 hours if you really try it. So I don't know. So yeah, that's kind of like my quick little review of that. Definitely worth checking out the book. It's called Five Nights at Freddy's The Fourth Closet. Check out Ultimate Custom Night. It's free on Steam. And since we talked about a video game, since we're a video game podcast, why don't we talk about some video games?
Okay.
So we've got 3 games we're going to talk about today. 2 from Tyler, 1 from me. So we'll start with Tyler. We'll do Life is Strange. You wanted to start with that one.
I just started playing Life is Strange for the first time. And I know it was like, it was huge and it was critically acclaimed. And it was like an episodic, choice-driven narrative. Which I'm always about those, you know. I love the Telltale games and stuff, but it never felt like the right time. Like every time I started thinking, oh, I should play that, some other game would come up or some life event would come up, and it would be like it would just kind of fall to the background again. But like I was saying earlier, I've got more free time this summer to kind of dig into stuff, and it was on the Steam Summer Sale, so I picked up Life is Strange and the Before the Storm pack, which isn't like a full 5 episodes, it's like a 3-episode arc, but it's like its own thing. And so I picked up both of those for I think like $12 or something like that.
Not bad.
Not at all. And so I've been playing through that, and I think maybe it was overhyped a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, because back when it was a really big deal, I really wanted to play it, and ever since then, you know, it's like it always comes up and I'm like, oh yeah, that was huge, and everybody keeps talking about it. Like even now, there are people that still reference Life is Strange as kind of like a high point for like the narrative-driven adventures.
Mm-hmm.
And I sort of have you played it?
I played some parts and pieces of it. You know, okay. I've heard enough about it to know some of what's going on.
So I've started playing it, and I think from like a story perspective, it is really interesting. And I like the mechanics of it, because especially in games like Telltale stuff, like, you know, The Walking Dead and The Wolf Among Us and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
there's some choices where it's like, as soon as I make them, I'm immediately like, oh, should I have done that? You know, and it's like,
yes.
you have, and so it's like, you know, you move through the story and then you see kind of like what other people chose and how other people played it. And it's like, well, okay, you know, you have to live with those choices now. And in Life is Strange, you don't have those consequences. If you do something and you don't like the way it turns out, you can just rewind it and try again. But it's not just like you rewind it and try again because that's what they decided to do for the game. They fit it into the story. That's one of like the core conceits of the story. And so in context, it's actually like really good. And I like that idea of being able to rewind if you don't like a decision you made, but it also being a part of the story and not just being something they do to help out the player. And I think as far as that goes, that's really good. And as far as the story, I'm really engrossed in it. I think that like the story itself and the way it's unfolding is really effective. It's got me really interested in wanting to know what happens next. But where it falters a little bit, and interestingly to me, what really doesn't work for me sometimes is the actual dialogue. Mm. And it's like, the voice actors are fine. They're not amazing, but they're fine. Mm-hmm. But some of the dialogue just feels not even like kitschy and campy. I'd be fine with that. But it doesn't feel like dialogue. It feels like something that should have been listed like at the bottom of the screen as like a tip for playing. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, like at one point, so I go into this one of the dorm rooms and I'm talking to this girl and I'm supposed to be getting a flash drive off of her desk, and I know that. But I'm thinking, I'm going to go scour the room, make sure I've got everything I can, talk to everybody, you know, so on and so forth. You know, just kind of be like as in-depth as I can be and make sure I'm not missing anything. Mm-hmm. But when I start having a conversation with this girl, she's like, the flash drive is over on the desk. You can go get it whenever you want.
Okay.
And I'm like, that, you know, I've been told that it's on the desk. And she even told me that it's on the desk. Like, it's very obviously there, and I know it's there, but at the end of the conversation, she still states it as, like, a core thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it seems really, like, like I said, it seems like one of those things that the game should, if the game wants to remind you, make it, like, a little tip at the bottom of the screen, mm-hmm. or, you know, something like that. It seems odd to me that, like, sometimes the dialogue, the way it's written, it just doesn't feel legitimate. It feels like it's being said very straight. It feels like the characters in the game are reading the tips and hints from the game or something like that.
Right, right.
And also, you know, some of the dialogue is campy and stuff, and it does get silly. You kind of roll your eyes, but it's not that bad. But I feel like sometimes the way the game is written is just not good. Like, it's just weird. To the point that it stands out to me. Mm-hmm. But I think, like I said, it's a small knock against a great experience. I am having a lot of fun playing it, and I'm really interested in the story. I kind of wish that it weren't so in your face, you know, like, oh, hey, you should go do this. Mm-hmm. You know, I wish that if they had something like that, it should be, like, in the menu or in the corner, you know, tucked away as part of the game, rather than the people using it as their dialogue, because it doesn't feel like a conversation to me. And in another game, I think it would be more forgivable, but in a game that is literally driven by its narrative and your choices when you talk to people, it stands out a little bit more to me as, like, a bad thing.
Okay.
But other than that, I mean, that's, you know, that's the worst thing I have to say about it. I think the game looks good. It plays really well. I like the mechanics of it. I like the story of it. Some of the dialogue doesn't always work for me, mm-hmm. but
you know, it's a different type of game, obviously. So one that, you know, for $12, I may even try to pick that up on Steam too.
Yeah, well, but, and the reason I finally pulled the trigger is because they've got the Awesome Adventures of Captain Spirit coming or here. Like they ended up releasing it the same day it was announced at E3. And one of my friends was telling me, you know, like, dude, you have to play this. It's super great. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I haven't even played the old ones. So I started playing these so that I could go get Captain Spirit. And so I'm trying to play through Life is Strange real quick. And then I'll play Before the Storm real quick. I'm trying to, because, you know, I just started it, I think, like, Thursday. Mm-hmm. I've been playing about one a day. I think I just finished the third episode. So I'm trying to play through those real quick so that I can get into Captain Spirit. And apparently that's a lead-in to the next Life is Strange, or something like that. So I'm trying to get through all those at a good pace.
All right. So, obviously, quite enjoying it. Mm-hmm. So, definitely worth checking out, obviously. Tyler's review on it. Seems, you know, a couple small knocks here and there. But every game's going to have, I think, those knocks.
Yeah.
But you know what game doesn't have those knocks, Tyler?
Barbie Adventures.
On the NES, yes, exactly. Barbie Adventures on the NES is the pinnacle of perfection. But I'm here to talk about Banjo-Kazooie, which just celebrated its 20th birthday just a few days ago, actually, June 29th in 1998. It was released kind of out of nowhere by Rareware, who, I really wish I could tell a story about, like, why I wanted it, but we got it for Christmas, I believe, that year. My sister and I was 8 years old at the time. You know, obviously still more hardcore into Power Rangers than anything else. But I just remember getting it and playing it. And my sister played it too, and she really enjoyed it. She actually beat it at 1 o'clock in the morning one day when she was home. And I was already asleep. You know, I was 8 years old, 8 or 9 at the time. and she was trying to pause it to come wake me up to watch the end scene after beating the game, but she couldn't. And I also remember, she might not remember, but if she does, she still blames me for this day. When we lived in New York, we had a basement downstairs. I went downstairs to go play the game, and my dad, who never showed any interest in playing these games at all, was sitting in the chair with the controller in his hand watching the opening credit to Banjo-Kazooie. He actually deleted my sister's game, and she blamed me for that one. And she was pretty far. She was actually on Rusty Bucket Bay, which is the second to last level before you start the game show and get to Grunty. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. She had to go back and redo all that. But to me, when I sat down and played it, you know, and the main reason why I say that was one of the games that really defined how I play games is, you know, we had an original Nintendo when, you know, my sister had it obviously before I was born. We never had a Super Nintendo or a Genesis or anything like that. I never really played on the computer. It was mainly just Power Rangers is all I wanted. That's Christmas and birthday, I just gave them a list of the Power Rangers stuff that I wanted. So then one year we did together get a Nintendo 64.
Yeah.
And we got Banjo-Kazooie. And I just remember playing that and not having any idea what to do, but running around and having fun. And it just really, it's one of those games to this day that I'll never get bored of playing, and that, you know, I'll still hook up my 64 to this day. And actually, one of my traditions is, even though I've already beaten a level millions of times and you can't go back and do it again, once you already, you know, collect the jiggies and everything, I'll still go back, like I am collecting the jigsaw pieces, is I'll go back around Halloween time and I'll play Mad Monster Mansion in the first one, just because it's Halloween, it's scary, whatever, scary. But, you know, it's just one of those games to me that really define, you know, why I play games to this day, what type of games do I like. Just to kind of throw in, when the second one came out, I don't remember the exact day, but I remember laying on the couch watching TV with my dad, again up in New York, so I think it came out in like 2000, I want to say. It was right before we moved here. And I remember it was yesterday, a character walked up. He said, "You need a parachute. That's a backpack." And then the camera spins, and it's like a guy in a banjo suit says, "Don't worry." And that's how I found out about Banjo-Tooie, and I flipped my lid at the time. Because I didn't have Nintendo Power coming in. Because, again, you know, a couple games. I never had Super Mario 64 as a kid.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where it's like, I had it for, like, Pokemon Stadium 2, a couple little things here and there. But Banjo-Kazooie, when I saw that, and then, obviously, a few years ago, 2015, when a couple of the guys from Rareware started Playtonic Studios, they released Yooka-Laylee, which is very, very good. Actually, in a couple weeks, I want to say, I think it's going to be an August pre-order time frame. Limited Run Games, who obviously does as such, they bring out limited run of physical versions of games that are normally only download, are actually going to bring Yooka-Laylee over to the Switch. It is available for download right now on the Switch, but if you wanted to, like, a physical copy to add to your collection, which of course I'm going to buy, even though I already have it on PS4, you know, it's just one of those games that, again, I can pick up and play. It's the same lore, kind of like the Five Nights at Freddy's thing. You know, it's not as good as Banjo-Kazooie, I don't think, but then again, you know, no game from the same guys who brought the original, which is my favorite game of all time, is ever going to make something that good.
Yeah.
You know, especially because, you know, Rareware still owns the BK license. You know, obviously I've said time and time again for years that I'd love Nintendo to buy at least Rareware back, or at the very least get the Banjo-Kazooie license back, give them to Retro Studios in Texas if they have to do that. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately that hasn't happened yet, but I'm still trying. I'm still waiting. I'm still trying. And First Four Figures, actually, next week, is going to do a full reveal of a Banjo-Kazooie statue, since they actually got the licensing rights for that and Conker.
Yeah.
So they showed two pictures just recently, on the 20th anniversary, actually. They showed two pictures of kind of like the chest up of Banjo and the chest up of Kazooie, but not like them. What does this actual statue as a whole look like? What does the base look like? It kind of looks like Kazooie's coming out of the backpack, from what I can tell, but that'll be, I think, this coming Friday, July, whatever it's going to be, is going to be like a full reveal. There's going to be a Q&A. I have no idea how much it's going to cost, but I don't really care because I'm going to buy it anyway. Mm-hmm. It's Banjo-Kazooie. But yeah, that's my favorite game of all time. Happy 20th birthday. Just some random small game that came out in the summer of 1998 and blew up into this phenomenon. Yeah. And Stop and Swap still sucks anyway. Unless you have anything to add to that, Tyler, at all, I know you kind of played it a little, sort of, kind of, but
I mean, I played through it way back when.
Yes.
I played, and it wasn't even my copy. It was my cousins had an N64 before we did, and they live in Ohio.
Okay.
Which actually, we're going to be making a trip to Ohio, so I'll get to see them again in a month or two. But they had an N64 way before we did, and so it was one time we were over there, and, you know, it was... normally we try to make it like a party thing. Like, we'll go over there and we'll boot up like Smash Bros. Or Mario Party or something like that. And then we decided at one point, it was a big trip, and normally we would stay with my grandparents, but I was staying over with them for a few days. And so we were like, well, let's just start playing a game. Mm-hmm. And so I started playing Banjo-Kazooie, like, actually in full rather than playing it as, like, you know, just... off and on. Mm-hmm. And so that was my first chance to like really dig into Banjo-Kazooie, and it is a really solid game. Like, mm-hmm. you know, I could recommend it as like a solid experience, but I never clicked with it the way you did, I don't think.
Yeah, this is one of those games for me. It's you know, when I played the Nintendo, I just had fun running around in Mario and Castlevania and Ninja Turtles and whatnot and doing that, but I never actually sat down to play a game.
Yeah.
You know, I played for like maybe half an hour, 45 minutes. Okay, I had my fun. Let me go back and play my Power Ranger toys, because that's all I wanted to do.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's just one of those things for me. You know, it's always going to hold a special place in my heart. Never going to go away. And even if I have to get rid of all my games for whatever reason, I'll make sure to keep my 64, Banjo-Kazooie, Banjo-Tooie, and my Japanese copies. I'll keep those too. So, moving on, we have one more game to talk about. Tyler and I'm going to try to talk about this one a little bit more, because I know more about this one than Life is Strange. Star Wars, that's the Old Republic you said you got back into.
Yeah, and I mean, we don't need to spend like an extensive amount of time on this. You know, this is old news at this point. I think, The Old Republic came out in like 2011?
Yes,
something like that?
Somewhere there, yeah.
And I love the actual, like, adventure RPGs. You know, the Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2 are amazing. And, you know, we don't need to go into detail about that. Because everybody knows how great they are by this point.
Yes.
But just recently, The Old Republic has been more important in my life again, because Haven and I have started playing that as kind of like an alternative to The Elder Scrolls Online, which we're still playing. It's not like we dropped off of that, but we're starting to play The Old Republic a little bit, just as kind of like a... Not like a segue, but just, like I said, an alternative. You know, something we can play whenever...
Something new.
Yeah, when we don't want, like, the high fantasy, or just when we need a change, we start doing The Old Republic a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And what really struck me is they made it free to play, which is great, because it used to be subscription-based. And when it first came out, I had bought the Collector's Edition for... It was insane. I think I spent, like, $150, $200 on that when that first came out, with, like, the statue and everything. And I still got it all. But, you know, and it was a subscription-based, so I was paying, like, $15 a month to use it. But then, after I dropped out, I started I started seeing all these free-to-play alternatives, or buy-to-play alternatives, like, games like Guild Wars and stuff, mm-hmm. you know? Where it was, like, it was an MMO, but it was, you would buy it and then just play it without a subscription. You would just buy the base game, like you would a normal game. And I liked that so much better, and so I started playing these other MMOs without really looking back. Same thing with Wildstar. I had subscribed to Wildstar for a few months, and I loved that one. I loved kind of that, like, campy sci-fi. That one was a little bit more cartoony and over the top, and I liked that a lot. But, you know, eventually I dropped off that boat, too. And then as they kind of lost a little bit of popularity and started losing their subscription basis to free-to-play games like Guild Wars, they ended up swapping their models.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, Wildstar and The Old Republic are both free-to-play now. But the problem that I'm seeing with The Old Republic right now, it is a lot of fun. I'm not trying to say, like, it's not fun anymore. And I think, even to this day, I think it still holds true that The Old Republic is one of the best story-driven MMOs.
True.
It's
true.
A lot of them, you know, they focus on PvP or, you know, like, fetch quests and things like that. And I think The Old Republic is still very much one of the best you can get if you want an MMO experience, but you also want, like, a story-driven PvE or player versus environment experience. And so Haven and I have grouped up, and we've been playing through a couple characters on there, and I love it. I love the stories, I love the dialogue choices, I love kind of the actual, like, the single player aspects that they bring into a online multiplayer experience. I think that was done really well originally, and I think it's only been improved upon now. But what bothers me is that they're so restrictive with their free to play. And I'm on like a preferred status because I had originally bought my copy and I had subscribed for a while. So they put me on like a preferred free status. And Haven's just, you know, basic status. So she's even a little bit more restricted, I think. But it's like, I started a new character and I started with like 50 slots in my inventory. And to expand that, you have to pay like a whole boatload of money to expand your stuff. And you can either buy money using your actual money in real life, or you can just grind it all up and then use it for a few more inventory slots. And that seems really silly to me. And I think Haven started out with like 20, 20 or 30. Like, she's even more restricted than I am. And same with like your character. There's like all sorts of like customization options and things you can do with like, you know, dyeing your clothes to make them all look the same and kind of, you know, making it unified. But you can only do that if you're a subscriber. Otherwise, you have to just, like, pick up the stuff and wear it the way it is. And stuff like that. You know, and it's like, there are restrictions, but the restrictions they have seem, like, really silly.
Sounds about right.
And so, it's not, like, an annoyance. Like, we're still having fun playing it. And, you know, the like I said, the main story is still a really enjoyable experience. But it seems like the stuff they're restricting is kind of odd. But maybe that's just me. But anyway, I just wanted to kind of get back in and tell you, you know, like, it is, I think it is an improved experience. It does seem a little bit more streamlined. Grouping works better, because I had played it for a while with my brother, and it wouldn't group well sometimes, and the grouping is just amazing, better than any of the others we've played, because we played The Secret World for a while, too, and that's another really good, like, story-driven MMO, but grouping was just bad. Like, it almost drove us away from the game after a while. Because even though we were a group, it wouldn't do anything. It would give us the experience together. So, like, I would kill an enemy, and it would give her the experience, or vice versa. But nothing else would group. We still had to do all of our quests separately. We had to pick up everything separately. Like, it wouldn't group us for quests or anything. And that got really annoying.
Okay.
Because there were times where just, you know, we'd run in, and I would pick something up, and we'd be going to do something. And then it would be like, Haven couldn't move on, because she hadn't also picked up this, like, tiny item that only drops 10% of the time or something like that. And so things like that would get really annoying. And so I think the grouping is amazing in the Old Republic. The story is amazing in the Old Republic. And I think those have both been improved, if anything, over the years. But the free-to-play model is a little bit silly and obtrusive sometimes, rather than like an incentive.
Well, just goes to show a 7-year-old game sometimes still has its problems.
Yeah.
But still, you know, if you're a big Star Wars nut, maybe worth to just pick up and play just casually.
Yeah, so. It is a whole lot of fun. And it goes deeper if you've played BioWare's other Knights games. Because Knights of the Old Republic 1 and 2, some of like the enemies and characters and things do come back up in the stories for the Old Republic. It is set after their first two single-player games. So if you've played their actual like single player RPGs, it's only enhanced in the Old Republic, which that's really cool too. That even though it is like a separate experience as an MMO, it is still kind of like unified to their lore and their backstories.
Of course, yeah. So Old Republic, fun game still. Or pick up and play. We say about a lot of things we're talking about is hopefully it's pick up and play worthy.
Insane toolbars.
Yeah.
Like your weapon slots and things, it goes all the way across from one to the equal sign. There's like, so you've got like 12 slots, and then you got like, I think 4 bars or 6 bars, something like that. So at any given time, depending on what kind of character you want to play, you could have like almost 50 different skills to choose from. And I think for some people who are into micromanaging and stuff, that could be awesome. But I think for Haven and I, especially coming off of the Elder Scrolls Online, which gives you, I think, like 5 or 6. I think it's 5 and then an ultimate or something like that. It's like, it's almost overwhelming. There's so much to do with like your different weapons and skills and things like that. That it's kind of like, we're not even level 20 yet. And we're already kind of like prioritizing our skills and things because we don't like switching bars and having all of these different things. So we're kind of like picking our top 6 to 12 and putting them in like our first slots and just kind of being like, let's just leave it like that because it's getting too intense already.
Lots to do in the game, at least.
Yeah, no, like for the people that enjoy it, like I said, for the people that like micromanaging or having a lot of control over like their different powers and abilities and things, it's amazing because you could play, you could set up, you know, these different bars for like different play styles, mm-hmm. and then you could, in theory, almost like swap out play styles just on the fly. Just pick a different skill bar and move forward with a different, a whole different type of character. But for us, it's easier to just kind of like pick your top, like I said, top like 6 to 12, put them in the first slots, and then not worry about it anymore. And then we just kind of swap them out as time goes by with more powerful ones or whatever.
Okay, okay. So, good little review there. You know, I think a lot more people, they always seem to get back into these PC games after a handful of years of it being out. And mm-hmm. I'm definitely seeing a lot more of my friends kind of going back to it.
Yeah, there's a big influx right now. Elder Scrolls is getting real big again. And Final Fantasy 14.
I think it's the E3, the post E3 hype. You know, we're in the middle of summer. We're not too much coming out. Get a trickle of a game here and there. But obviously, once we get to like September, September's really when the holiday. I always say the holidays start September. You know, that's when Tomb Raider comes out. That's when Spider-Man comes out, and then it just kind of goes downhill from there. Like even right up to January, like we talked about last time with Kingdom Hearts and Resident Evil coming out like a week of each other at the end of January. So I think a lot of people right now are just kind of getting into these big games where there's so much to do again, just to kind of pass the time before all these wallet-crushing games come out.
Yeah. Later.
Two more to go, which I'm starting to fade again, so I apologize if I look a little eh. Real quick, I just want to talk about Toys R Us Final Thoughts, which, they closed all their stores in Puerto Rico and the United States on June 29th. As I said, it was the same day of the 20th anniversary of Banjo-Kazooie.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how many, you know, if I've mentioned this much to you even or whatnot, but when I lived in New York, we had a toy store called KB Toys that was in the mall.
Yeah,
that's where I went. I remember my Grammy and Poppy would go out to the Grease Ridge Mall. We'd go to KB Toys. I remember getting a Power Ranger toy. I'd always get like one of the little flip heads or like one little, you know, I think they were $5.99 at the time. I remember like it was yesterday, walking in and grabbing them, going up to the counter. And then for good report cards or something, you know, they would up it and I'd get like a Megazord and whatnot, which was through the roof amazing. But we never really went to Toys R Us too often. I actually remember going and getting like the Big Book of Toys, which at the time was a Big Book of Toys. It looked like a freaking phone book.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just went right to the Power Ranger stuff. I bunny-eared the page. I circled the ones I want. And they just kind of went from there. I don't know if they actually got them from Toys R Us or KB, but that's how that went for me up there. And then down here, when we moved in 2001... You know, I was kind of getting out of the Power Ranger scene, but I still, I was into something called Zoids. I know I talked to you about that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my dad and I would always go to the Toys R Us here. You know, it's been closed and demolished, but there used to be one off of Southside Boulevard over here.
Yeah.
Right where the new play club, whatever it's called, is.
Yeah.
And I remember just getting all my Zoids there. And I actually remember getting some Bionicles there, too. But for me, really, I was never...
Wow.
Yeah.
I haven't thought about Bionicles in a long time.
They're still coming out with them, too. You know, I remember getting my Bionicles there, and I remember getting my Zoids there. And then right after that is when I was like, okay, that's enough of the toys. I'm going to go... You know, it became more video games. And I actually really didn't get back into toys until Bandai, who has the Power Ranger toy license, started releasing the Legacy figures, which were, at the time... A lot of them were Toys R Us exclusives. So I remember going there and getting like my Legacy Megazord, Legacy Dragon Zord, Tiger Zord, a bunch of the bigger pieces I got there. And then like the little, the $20 figures, they started showing up at Targets and Walmarts and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest thing I want to say is that, yes, some of Toys R Us's prices were definitely higher. But especially near the end, you know, they had a price match guarantee. Where you just show them an ad, you know, show them an ad on your phone, bring it in, and they would not only price match it, but the difference that they price match, they would actually donate to children's charities, which I thought was amazing. Unfortunately, it was a little too late, but a lot of their prices were not that much higher that people would always say. Now, granted, I only mainly looked for one specific thing, like or two or three. Like, I'd go to the Power Rangers, I'd look at the Transformers, I'd look at the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, And so I would check those out, and then, you know, I would go to Target or something to see if they had anything different. And they were really the same price.
Yeah.
The two big problems that I think Toys R Us had is that a lot of these places, like Toys R Us or GameStop, they make their money primarily at the holidays. Maybe GameStop a little different when, like, the newest game first comes out. You know, they'll make something.
Yeah.
But when I first got back to Toys, I was like, great, send me the big book of toys. And I remember the first year that I got it was probably 2013 or 14, I want to say. I don't remember off the top of my head. And their big book of toys was like this thick, and that was it. And it was minuscule. It was ridiculous. And I'm like, this isn't the big book of toys. I mean, I used to work at Walgreens once upon a time, and I remember the Black Friday after Walgreens would sometimes be bigger than the big book of toys or Toys R Us. So obviously they did not have the right kind of sales going on for that. They, you know, they had their video game stuff, which, you know, Best Buy, Walmart, Target always did very well with. I think GameStop last year, like, just even by a few bucks, like, just killed it. And, you know, kind of nitpicking with that, but a lot of their toys deals, like, if you had, like, for me, for example, their toy deals, if I wanted one specific thing, like, I remember a few times out of the year, they would do their Power Ranger toys, buy one, get one half off. So, okay, that's a good deal to add to, you know, buying an extra item. And again, they were the same price. You know, the little 5.5-inch figures, 6-inch figures are $9.99 everywhere you go, and then the buy one, get one half off, so I was saving $5 by getting two of them. A lot of people are like, oh, you know, online killed it. Yeah, a little bit online did, but at the same time, it was the massive debt. I think they took on like $5 billion in debt when these three companies like took them private or something, so that obviously didn't help. People did start shopping online, but I remember going to Toys R Us even more recently and just looking and being able to find a lot of much bigger selection. Like, again, I mainly only talk about the Power Ranger stuff because that's what I know. And you can go to a Walmart or a Target now and they just have like a little 3-foot section of it. Whereas when I went to Toys R Us, they had at least half the aisle just full of them. And, you know, enough to go around. So where like a Target would order one case of like a legacy line of figures, put them up, and then if you have a collector like me that comes in, is like, wow, they got them in, let me just take one of all of them. At least Toys R Us, they would have multiple cases of them come in. Obviously, you always got to try to fight the scalpers when it comes to this kind of stuff, but at least, you know, they would have more for everybody rather than just one line. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm going to miss Toys R Us, because even at the end of the day, even if I am more of a KB Toys guy, every kid needs to have a toy store to go to, you know, to just run around and pick up and play. And I'm not going to get much more into it because I know there was a lot of videos on YouTube of everyone talking about that. But, you know, Toys R Us, we're going to miss you. They're still around in Canada. They're still around in Canada. I believe they're also still around in Australia. They're already talking about a revival of some sorts. You know, maybe just making a smaller store. KB Toys has talked about doing like a pop-up store, like, you know, Spirit Halloween comes around from there. Just a little something just for the holidays. And I think that'll still do well. Yeah. You know, people do still go out and shop. It's not just all online. And I believe that if they do the price matching stuff, then that will help too, going forward. So Toys R Us, I'm going to miss you. Rest in peace. And that's really all I got to say on that. I don't want to get too much into it. Todd, do you have any memories of Toys R Us you'd like to share?
Not really. We did a lot of our shopping was in like bookstores and things. We did a lot of like Books A Million and Barnes and Noble and stuff like that. We didn't actually spend a whole lot of time in Toys R Us when I was younger. Yeah, I did really like though. Whenever they did close, they put out a statement basically just saying, "Keep your childhood alive." Mm-hmm. Like, you know,
don't ever grow up.
Yeah, just basically saying, you know, like you're always young at heart, and I thought that was really cool. It was an elegant way to go out. I liked that.
You know, a lot of people are going to complain and, you know, say, oh, well, listen, people got to realize to still go out and shop. You know, I do order online once in a while if I absolutely need to, if I can't find it. But you're still supporting local. You're still supporting the same places and whatnot. And, you know, it's just one of those things where it sucks to see a big place like that go and, you know, kind of go up into heaven with everything with Blockbuster and Funko Land and Kitty City, which I never had a Kitty City, but I know about it because it was more of an East Coast type of deal.
Yeah.
But you never know. Toys R Us could come back, maybe in a smaller capacity. And we'll just have to really wait and see at that aspect, because it very well could. I mean, they had massive stores that now these owners have got to figure out a way to divide them or whatever they want to do. I know for us, we have a thing called the St. John's Town Center near us, and right where Toys R Us used to be a Best Buy right next door to it. Best Buy moved across the street, so now they have this big, humongous, like, plot with these two giant storefronts now closed right next to each other. So yeah. I'm always kind of wondering what they're going to do with that. So I guess we'll see. Maybe something, I don't even know what they could put there.
Yeah.
I mean, Best Buy itself is relatively large, and then you got a big Toys R Us, and you got a big Babies R Us that, you know, they're all obviously attached.
And, I'm not, based on the other stores we see around there, though, I'm not super hopeful. I'm a little bit worried that it's just going to end up being another, like, clothing retail store or something like that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I don't know what they kind of put there. There's so many restaurants in that area now. They could put some other, I mean, there's already, I mean, any type of restaurant that's already, I don't even know. I'm trying to babble to even remotely come up with something of what they could put there. Maybe they could put a motorcycle shop there. I don't know. I'm just spitballing now. But those were our final thoughts on Toys R Us. So our last topic before I absolutely fade out is, I've been going kind of downhill. Our question of the bye week, really. Our question of the bye week is, second, we're in July 1st is the day that we're recording this. So we're second half of the year, technically. What are we just looking forward to playing? What's coming out? And, you know, I could sit here for me and say Smash Bros., but I'm going to switch my answer up a little bit. But I'm going to let Tyler go first on this one, since I think did the Toys R Us stuff.
Yeah, and we'll keep it quick. I think we both could go on and on about all the games coming this second half of the year. But I think if you want to really focus it down and talk about the one that I am super hyped for that's coming out this year, it's going to be Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee.
Definitely a big one.
And I know some people are bummed out that it's not like a new entry with new Pokemon, but I am all about it. Because, I mean, Pokemon Yellow was one of my favorite games growing up. Like, you know, because I played Red and Blue, but then whenever they came out with Yellow, just having Pikachu follow you around and give, like, the little emoji faces whenever you talk to him and stuff was just the best thing ever as a kid. Like, on Game Boy Color, like, walking around and having Pikachu, like, talk to you and give you little faces and things, that was just, like, the most amazing thing ever to, like, my little 8-year-old self. And so the idea of bringing that back, basically that same game, but also having the option to play as Eevee back, is just amazing to me. Like, I love what I've seen so far, and I don't even mind the Pokemon Go stuff. Like, I know that you don't necessarily get, like, the turn-based strategic combat of the old games during, like, catching Pokemon, but it's still there. It's still retained. It's not like it's gone from the series. You still use it for all of the trainer battles on the road, all of the gym battles, the Elite Four, all of that is still your standard, you know. You level up your Pokemon, you choose their moves, you fight against the other people, the same way it's always been. The only thing that's changed is the initial time you encounter a Pokemon and you're catching it. That's the only difference, as far as I can tell.
Yes.
That's where they've initiated, like, the Pokemon Go system. And I'm fine with that. Especially now that they've got the new controller, which I know there have been, like, mixed reviews about it. Some people are saying it's great. Some people are saying it's a little bit uncomfortable. But I'm super stoked to get, like, the Pokeball controller and, like, actually, like, pretend to throw the ball and stuff. I'm all over that. Like,
I'm super
hyped for that. Even more than, and I mean, that's what I was looking at earlier. I was making sure that there wasn't, like, something else I was forgetting. But even with everything else, like, you know, with, like, Spider-Man and Shadow of the Tomb Raider and all these, like, big upcoming, like, AAA titles, the game that I think... It might just be like a nostalgia factor, but the game right now that I am most hyped for is being able to take Pokemon with me on my Switch, and it also being one of the games that I loved most as a kid. It's everything that I wanted, personally.
See, I'm very much looking forward to it, too, and I know a lot of people are going to whine and complain, but, you know, you're never going to have anything perfect. This is their first, you know, go at this.
Yeah.
Get it? Pokemon Go. First go. Funny. Oh, man.
So it's their second go, technically.
Yes. Yeah, technically, yeah. I think for me, you know, I could sit here and say Smash Brothers, I could sit here and say Pokemon, but you actually named two of them that I'm looking forward to that come out within a week of each other.
Yeah.
Is Tomb Raider being one of my favorite franchises ever. I absolutely love it. And then Spider-Man. Coming out. And I think why Spider-Man is so interesting to me is that, you know, I'm more of a Marvel fan than I am DC. I do enjoy DC, but having enjoyed Batman, the Arkham series, so much, and then seeing a potential a Spider-Man game play like that in some way, I'm really looking forward to it. And especially because Spider-Man is a little bit older in this one. I think it's like it takes place 8 years after he got bit,
yeah,
is what they said. So I think there's a lot of good potential into that one. And of course, Tomb Raider, I'm looking forward to. A lot of good games. We talked about Stargate coming from Ubisoft.
Mm-hmm.
That one is October. So I could look at my list, but, you know, I turned the phone off because I didn't want to be distracted on, like, someone. But,
there's another one that, and I don't even know if it's coming this year. since I saw the first footage for Biomutant, I've been super into the idea of Biomutant.
I don't know if that was coming this year.
I heard, the list that I was looking at earlier, it said, like, to be announced 2018. And I'm like, that seems really optimistic. I was thinking that one was not coming 20. I was thinking that was like early 2019.
Right,
I was thinking that was like March of 19. But I mean, if it comes, that's awesome. I'm excited for it.
So we'll see. I think those two would be my two biggest ones. Mm-hmm. If Yoshi somehow gets released this year. I actually talked to our Nintendo representative in the area. I saw her this past week.
Yeah.
And I said to her straight up, I was like, yo, I'm kind of surprised. You know, Yoshi was shown last year with footage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they didn't even mention a breath of it at E3 this year. And she said, well, you know, she likes to mess around like the Nintendo way and act like she doesn't know anything, but she does it so well that I really can't tell when she's joking or not.
Yeah.
But she said, you know, it's still, at the time, it was still end of June. You know, it's just this past week, so, you know, still at the same time. And she said, there's going to be a few more directs, obviously, before the end of the year, so it could very well end up being like that. September release, October release, is, you know, they've got Pokemon in November, which she actually said, which I agree with, is that it wasn't a direct Nintendo game. It's more of a Pokemon company game, whereas, you know, Smash Brothers is like, here's a Nintendo type mm-hmm. of game. I know that's kind of weird to say, but her words, not mine. But yeah, I would say, you know, Tomb Raider and Spider-Man are my two that I'm looking most forward to in September. And I think that's really all we had for the show. I am fading so fast.
Yeah, you gotta get back.
I do.
You settle down some.
Yeah, definitely need to settle down a little bit. But guys, thanks so much for watching episode 5. We'll have this up everywhere, and we'll blast it on social media.
And just yes. real quick. I think, if I remember right, only one person saw our little snafu from last week.
Yes, we're working on that.
We were trying to get some live streaming done. We were gonna play Mario Tennis Aces. Mm. And the live stream just was not working. It was just all a bomb. We were only online for, I think, like 15 seconds or something like that.
Yes.
And even then, I think about 5 of those seconds, the Switch was not even broadcasting. It was just us behind a black screen. So I have been working hard on that, and I've got it all set up. The streaming is working. Everything is set up. So if all goes well,
yes,
we should be streaming probably tennis. If not, we'll figure something out. But in all likelihood, we should be streaming tennis next weekend.
Yes.
We're gonna try to go to a bi-weekly schedule where we do podcast 1 week and then streaming the next week and then back to a podcast. And so as long as I think I've got the streaming all set up and locked down. So next weekend should be Mario Tennis Aces. So make sure to tune in for that. We'll shout it out on all of our different social medias to let you know when that's going to be. But make sure to tune in for that too. We're going to try to do that again next weekend.
And on top of that as well, I think both of us, even just individually, are going to try to stream just a little bit, just to put out a little more mm-hmm. content. Because, you know, even though we do share a lot of the same brain a lot of the same time, you know, we do play some different games.
Yeah.
I have my Elgato. I actually got that set up. I downloaded everything so I can do it on Windows 7 now. So mm-hmm. I'm finished getting, depending on how I feel when I get home, I'll try to get that finished up today. We'll have it all under the same mantra of the BFG podcast on Twitch.
If it involves one or both of us, it should be up there. So whichever one of us you like better, come watch.
Or if you just don't like us at all, then come watch anyway.
Yeah, if you don't like either one of us, come watch. And maybe, if we're lucky, we'll be able to get Haven in, my wife in, on maybe one of the streams or something.
We're going to try and do a lot of new things. You know, we just want to make sure we put up more content than us just talking to each other for, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hours every other week. So make sure to check that out. And of course, you know, we'll blast it out what we're doing. And as we get more comfortable and get more things going, you know, we'll see what you guys want us to play.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, you know, I'm sure speaking way into the future, especially on the Switch side, we'll probably do some Pokemon since we could play that together.
Yes.
We'll do some Smash Brothers mm-hmm. Since we could play that together.
Mario Party.
Mario Party for sure. I'll bring mine over, see if we can get the
see, that's going to be tricky as far as streaming. Because if, we undock them,
yeah,
and put them
that's true,
so
that's true.
For the sake of like live streaming, I'm not sure how that would work, but we'll figure something out.
We got time for that. That's in October. But anyway, guys, I want to thank you guys so much for watching episode 5. We'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 6. We'll probably be back next week for some Mario Tennis Aces, mm-hmm, some stream. And that one, we're not going to do anything too professional with it. We're going to probably, hopefully... We'll
same bad quality you've gotten from us so far.
We're gonna keep this door open this time because it is absolutely hot in here. There may be a dog that comes in and sees us. You're going to hear noises, mm-hmm, in the background, but that's okay because that's what streaming is all about.
On the bright side, though, I was able to get everything set up under the desk.
Yes.
So another problem we had last time was that the dog would come in and like just pull the switch off the desk and like knock things over. So I've rewired everything in the last week or two, and so we should be able to get the switch set up under the desk so that hopefully
we'll block the dog.
Yeah.
Anyway, anyways, thanks again so much for watching, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right. Bye.